Hang on. The sun's up, and it's not Friday.
It's early. Damn early.
Must mean that you're on Community Radio 3CR for Saturday Kick-Ons with Jacob and Mercedes.
Hi there.
Oh, the pillars of society cruise down the road each day. They got the economic wherewithal. We can't afford to pay.
If Friday night's rave wasn't enough for you, we've got an hour-long summer special where you can listen to us for the next hour from 9 till 10 a.m.
There's a hierarchy of dominance with a power at the top. And if you think you found the magic key, you find they changed the locks. The pillars of society drive us like a tool. For them, that's cool.
So if you're a regular Asia Pacific Currents listener, you know who we are. Stay tuned.
You're tuned to Community Radio 3CR with me, Mercedes. I'm with Jacob in the studio for our fourth and final Saturday Kick-On. So as you all know, over the summer we did four programs. This will be our final one, taking the reins from Asia Pacific Currents and Palestine Remembered. Well, they took a well-earned break, but they'll be back with regular programming next week. And just to make sure, if you want to go back, if you missed any of the Saturday Kick-On episodes over the summer, they're all podcasted via your favourite podcast client and on the Friday Raves 3CR page on the website.
Yeah, and if you're a regular Saturday morning listener, this Friday, take a thought about tuning in at 5 o'clock to hear more of the same kind of commentary on the who's who that's screwing you.
Yeah, that's right. So you're tuned to Community Radio 3CR at 8:55 a.m. or at all the W's at 3cr.org.au or 3CR Digital, or of course you might be listening back.
Or you might even be listening to your state-of-the-art surveillance helicopter in the sky.
That's right. Now, over the last couple of weeks on a Friday rave, if you're a listener, and if you're not, this might be the first time you've heard of it, but we had been discussing talking about Poly Market and the predictions market more succinctly. And we said that we need to dedicate a show to it. And once we started looking into it, we realised that maybe the regular half-hour program on a Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock might not have been enough time to really get into it. So this episode of Saturday Kick-Ons, for our final one, we're going to bring you the macabre story of prediction markets.
Oh, geez. And this is a hard one because, really, I'm reading back some of the notes that we sent each other the other day, and if you'd sent this to me 10 years ago, I would have thought you were a cooker.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even 6 months ago, just seeing, I guess, and we're going to get into it a little bit more, but going onto X or Twitter, you know, and just seeing how much of the feeds are now flooded with Poly Market and predictive markets data of just this kind of advertising boom around it. And even 6 months ago, we would have said,
wasn't there. You know, because, and we did this because it sort of came to light, and we've been aware of it and talking about it for some time, but it's came to light in recent times that more people have heard about it, because one of the companies, you say Poly Market, it's just one of the prediction market companies, took bets on whether and when the United States would invade Venezuela. And what can I say? Someone was set to win $400,000, so $750,000 Australian dollars on the bet. And then Poly Market turned around and said, no, Venezuela wasn't invaded because there was no invasion. The government of Venezuela was still in place. The infrastructure is still in place. The US were in and out. That was a policing operation. But it brings the bigger question, not just that the fact that they're taking bets on whether a country will be invaded and whether Israel will keep a ceasefire until such and such a date and whether famine will crush this country and all that kind of thing, all kinds of nasty stuff. But I just think it's going to play a bigger and bigger role, as you'll see, in the way news is reported and the way decisions are made. So we thought it was a good opportunity to talk about exactly what these prediction markets are, because they're not betting. They're not gambling.
For all intents and purposes, they're betting, but it's much deeper in order for the, for them to be able to operate. They're not betting.
They're not betting.
Yeah.
They're a derivative market.
Yes.
You know, years ago.
So they say, you know.
Well they are. I mean, yeah. Well.
Regulated as such, so I guess they are.
Yeah, gambling used to be, when I was a lad, all those years ago, primarily on the races. You know, and there were two different types of bet you could make, either at the TAB or the SP Bookie. Now, the SP and SP Bookie stands for starting price, which means that the bet you make has got a set price. You might be going 2-1 or 3-4 or whatever. And that's similar to what you're doing with sports bet when people bet on the football. You know that if you put a dollar on Collingwood to win, you're going to get $1.10 back when they do. All right, but the TAB, the TAB, that stood for Totalisator Agency Board, right? They were state government-owned agencies. They're now corporatised and sold off like everything else. But with a Totalisator bet or a TAB bet, you didn't know what the odds were until the race was over and all the bets tallied up and divvied up. But that was sort of like it all depended on who bet on what. So either way, SP or TAB, your bet was between you and the bookie or you and the agency. And once you made it, that was the end of it until the race. And prediction markets work sort of like a totalisator, in as much as the odds are determined not by an expert, by the bookie, but by what people are betting on.
And I think it's important to note, you know, that in some of the things I've read when they're talking about prediction markets, they talked about informed individuals, or taking, like, anyone that is a trader on a prediction market is considered an informed individual.
Exactly.
Because it's kind of based on this idea that if people have a financial incentive, then they're going to inform themselves to a degree about what they're actually putting their money into.
Yeah, yeah. But to go back for a moment, on last week's show, our Saturday kick-ons, we spoke with Clinton Fernandez, and if you didn't get to catch that show, you should go back to the podcast and listen, because Clinton's worth listening to. But in the course of that conversation, he pointed out that whilst the US Federal Reserve had printed $1 trillion in currency between when they started in 1913 and the global financial crisis in 2009, they then printed an additional $1 trillion to cope with it that year and have gone on to keep printing more and more money. And in this economic climate, he pointed out that the economy needs to develop more and more ways and means to transfer money between those that have it, because the whole point of money is to be transferred. Mm. Money's not worth anything while it's just sitting in a bank. Now, long-term listeners to our normal show, as I said, Friday Rave, may be aware of our mantra that the whole sole goal of capitalism is to ensure the flow of more and more wealth into fewer and fewer hands. They probably also know that at least 98% of all financial transactions globally are purely about financial transactions and not tied to the real economy, I dare call it real, of goods and services. And Clinton cited things like cryptocurrencies and non-fungible tokens or NFTs as basically Ponzi schemes that increase the opportunities for circulating money amongst, of course, those that have it, bearing in mind that the house always gets a cut.
And I just want to say, you know, we had this kind of very brief discussion yesterday about, at the time when cryptocurrency was sort of emerging and growing, and blockchain currency, and there was kind of this idea or this this feeling drummed up that cryptocurrency was going to challenge, be a legitimate challenge to traditional banking systems. And I think that, you know, when you see it now in hindsight, but of course the traditional banking system, like, this is so powerful that it's actually not going to allow, because it's still part of the same system. And I think what Clinton's comments, and when you look at these Ponzi schemes in order to develop new markets and new economies in order to invest and move that money around, it's just part of the same thing, a new way of doing it.
Exactly.
But it's exactly the same players.
Exactly the same players, you know. But, you know, and it's been going on for a long time. I mean, things like prediction markets, how can I put it? They, just a type of financial speculation. And before I go on, most of the folks we've talked to about this, and indeed a great deal of the media articles that we've been reading about it, are focusing on the morality of the idea of gambling on war, on gambling on death, on gambling on famine. And while this is bad enough for you to want to avoid it like the plague, the global economy, excuse me, in case you haven't noticed, doesn't run on morality, except as a commodity, of course.
Well, everything is commodified.
Everything's commodified.
Yeah.
You know, morality has nothing to do with it. And we'll get to how, I want to get on, I'm just going through notes here, but I want to get on how the prediction markets are changing things. But I think it's important to know, because they are going to play a bigger role, exactly what they are. So, as I say, they've been likened to betting, but they aren't betting, except in the sense that all financial speculation is betting. And they're a form of financial speculation that's been around for a long time. You may have come across terms like put options and call options in regard to stock market speculation, and swaps, and what's the other one? For futures trading and forwards. They're all different ways of moving money round without actually buying or selling anything. Okay, so you think of a...
So it's like trading on potentiality or potential or prediction.
It's exactly.
Yeah.
It's exactly what it is. And like you think of, I don't know, a call option, for example, is when you buy the right to buy a security at a specified price up to the date of its expiration. All right, so if you, Mercedes, owns a certain amount of, I don't know, 3CR shares, not that we have shares, I could pay a premium to you that says in August or by August, your shares are currently worth a dollar now, I'll buy them off you for $1.10 in August. Now, I don't have to, but if August comes around and I see that 3CR shares have gone through the roof and are now worth $1.40, I can force you to sell them to me for $1.10.
At the original price.
At the price. Or, alternately, you can say to me, I've got these 100 shares at worth a dollar, and sometime in August I'll sell them to you for 85 cents. And depending on how the markets go, we can determine whether we do that, or the one who's holding the premium can determine whether they take up that option or not. Mm. But they can also trade them. I could then go to you, listener, and say, I'm holding options to buy Mercedes Qantas shares in August. Mm. Do you want a piece of the action? And so the bet, the gamble, the option becomes a tradable commodity in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's futures where there's an agreement that we will buy them at this point and this time. There's swaps where on this date I'll swap you X of these shares for Y of those shares. All these things. There's speculation in currents, in share prices. Mm-hmm. And that's how prediction markets work. That when you... You don't make a bet with a prediction market. You make a contract.
Mm.
Now, if we're talking, for example, of the fact that, the Invasion Day rally this coming 26th of January at 10 a.m., I think it is.
11 a.m.
11 a.m. at Parliament House. I might decide to make a bet on whether there's more than 10,000 people. All right, now I might buy, and generally it's in terms of $0 or a dollar, so that if there is more than 10,000 people, I'll get a dollar.
Mm.
If there's less, I get nothing. And I buy that contract, I might say, for 50 cents.
Yeah, and it's just to be noted, all of these contracts on Polymarket are yes or no. So they're a complete binary, whereas $1 is yes, $0 is no.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, but then... Because I've bought it, if I buy it at 50 cents, what I'm saying is, I reckon there's a 50-50 chance it's going to be at over 10,000 people. But I might be so absolutely sure that it's going to be more than 10,000 people that I'll buy them for 90 cents because it's such a, you know, such a sure thing in my mind that I'm prepared to put out nine to make one. If I think it's never going to happen, but, hey, it's worth a shot, it's like betting on an outsider at the races. You might buy it for 10 cents, not thinking it's going to happen, but if it does, well, you've made a mozza. And then these contracts can be bought and sold to each other and across the market as the time goes on. So if something happened that makes it look like the Invasion Day rally is going to be huge, then I might sell the shares or someone might want to buy my contracts for more than I was willing to pay for them to start with. So the whole speculation is the commodity. And that is just like just thinking of that on its own. You know, the contract is like an option. It becomes the tradable commodity. Now, share options and futures trading and all those kind of things are regulated by stacks of financial laws. You may have heard of insider trading, you know, where if you know something is going to happen, you buy or sell stock in such a way as you're going to benefit of them because you've got insider information that your average stock trader didn't have. And these laws are tied to the market because as far as the options and all the rest of them, the derivatives go, eventually they result in the buying or selling of shares which are linked to a commodity or a service. Prediction markets may be used to enter a contract to speculate on the share price or even a commodity price, but ultimately their end result is not the transfer of shares. They are therefore, in the US, which is of course the biggest market, pretty much unregulated.
And I think it's worth mentioning here that, you know, even though it sort of is gambling, it's not gambling in terms of the way it's regulated. It's regulated as a financial market, but it's regulated as a derivatives market, which doesn't prohibit insider trading.
That's right. So, you know,
it's a free-for-all.
It's a free-for-all. And the markets for what you can contract are getting wider and wider. I mean, it's not just whether, you know, the US is going to invade Venezuela. It's things like celebrity divorces. There are huge markets, millions of dollars involved on whether this celebrity or that celebrity is going to get divorced. You know, down to famines, invasions, Golden Globe Awards.
Official partner, which, you know, we're going to talk about a little bit later, but the normalization of prediction markets into everyday life in partnering with the Golden Globes and having the prediction market ticker down the Polymarket ticker down the bottom.
Yeah. And, you know, we've been mentioning Polymarket, but the other main one, of course, is Kalshi, K-A-L-S-H-I. And to talk about the kind of things they're going to they want to open markets on, get it from the horse's mouth. The CEO of Kalshi, a bloke by the name of Tarek Mansour, said it straight out at a finances conference last October. And this is a quote. "The long-term vision is to financialize everything and create a tradable asset out of any difference in opinion." Get that? Any difference of opinion is a tradable financialized asset.
Thought markets.
Thought markets. Exactly. Exactly. So we've only spoken so far about the prediction markets and how they make monies by speculating on the outcome of events. Because the events are tradable, it means the price of the contract, as I said, you know, 50 cents for a dollar is a 50%, they can be seen as the odds of something happening. So the price of a contract is then interpreted as being a pretty good indicator of an event's likelihood. And people and governments and everyone, militaries, determine policies and make decisions based on likelihood.
And it's important to mention here that because of the way that Polymarket and Kalshi and these prediction markets work, as contracts are bought and sold or traded, by traders within the market, it's pretty much almost real-time fluctuations in what that likelihood is. Yes. So whether it, you know, so say you go and buy so or trade so many yes in this, and it's going to fluctuate almost in real time. And so, you know, you get people who throw a lot of money between it into yes or no in a contract, and it's going to fluctuate it at that time.
Instantaneously.
And then it's going to suggest to other traders, oh, does that person know something that I don't, or, you know?
Yeah, but they're not just other traders. We did a show on a Friday rave some weeks ago now with Sue Hazeldine from the West Mallee Protection Society about the satellite launches taking place from Canimba, and Whalers Way. And we pointed out that one of the reasons, you know, when I on the Friday rave was first talking about satellites 5 years ago, I said there are 3,000 of the things up there already. There are now 15,000.
Mm.
All right. And these satellites are getting up there because of communications. Now, you put that together with super fast computers, and it's not just traders making the options anymore. There are whole algorithms.
Mm.
Sitting on computer servers, it says when the polymarket price or the Kalshi price or whatever, they might average out the various derivative prices, gets to a certain point, buy this or contract that or sell that. So the traders don't even know anymore. They're all bots.
They're all bots.
They're AI bots making and trading these contracts. And they have to work by satellites, because we're talking about satellites happening at, you know, transferring information via radio waves at the speed of sound. So you're right, they're just instantaneous.
Mm.
Instantaneous. But then there's just one, you know, there's a lot of more things I want to say, but you might say, for example, that just because someone's prepared to gamble on an outcome, it doesn't make it real. You know, so what if someone says, I believe this? Why should we think that that's going to make it happen? Well, I want to introduce a concept called the wisdom of the crowd. All right, now that's basically the notion that a collective opinion of a diverse group yields a better judgment than one or two individual experts.
Mm-hmm.
And this is often described in terms of sideshow games, where you might have to guess the number of jelly beans in a jar. Now, if you have one or two people, even if they're experts on how many jelly beans fit in a jar, they're not going to get it bang on. But the bigger the amount of people who have a guess, when you average that amount out, you approach very, very close, if not spot on, to the correct answer. All right, so the wisdom of the crowd is better than the wisdom of experts, particularly when the crowd reaches, I guess, a number which I'll call a tipping point.
Yeah.
All right. Now,
which they don't really, I mean, they do talk quite a lot, you know, the CEOs and Pro Poly Market and Kalshi and Prediction Market talk about the importance of these markets growing and being really expansive off the basis of this idea of wisdom of the crowd. And I think it's important to note that the more, because of the theory of the wisdom of the crowd, when you have more people, traders, quote unquote, these are the terms that they use, that are bidding on contracts within a thing, it stabilizes whether the market for that contract becomes more stable, because you've got a larger base of quote unquote experts that are invested in it. And so when there's not as much user interest in a particular contract, it makes it much more volatile, just like anything, you know. That's like anything. So the MO is to try and get more people involved in Polymarket. And I think in regards to that, in predictions market. I keep saying poly market. That's the one that's on my mind. That's the largest predictions market. After Kalshi.
After Kalshi, yeah.
After Kalshi. But also I think it's important to note that as a result of that, there have been allegations against poly market in particular about what's called wash trading.
Right.
And so wash trading is where you get people just to buy and sell contracts by options, I guess, on a particular contract to make it look like there's more activity, to then to then engage,
encourage
other traders to engage in it. So they've had, there's been two independent investigations into wash trading, which found and at Polymarket.
Right. Okay.
So that it's fudging already.
They're already fudging. And the other point too, I want to make is we're talking about the wisdom of the crowd. That it's not only the bigger the crowd is, it's the more diverse the crowd is. You get a better approximation to the correct amount. But it's also about, you know, if you're thinking of an oldie timey sideshow store where you're looking at jelly beans in a jar, if you've got someone walking past continuously muttering things like, it's always more than you think it is, you know, surely it's bigger than that, then it's human nature that you will automatically second guess yourself and increase your number. Conversely, if someone's walking around saying it's never as big as you think it is, you're going to downplay your number. And this is the role of the media. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about events like the invasion of Venezuela, where not talking about diversity, because it's only a certain class of people who are engaged in the predictions market at the moment, which is why they want to increase the predictions market, because the more people unlike them, more people like us and everything, then the closer the approximation they're going to get to correct. But also, so there's no diversity there, but there's also the media. So the people who are the very same people who are making these prediction market contracts are the people who, A, have tech savvy, because they're doing it all online, of course, and have money. So therefore, you could largely say they're middle class and above Western people, although working class people bet too. let's not forget. But yeah.
So we're going to get to where prediction markets sit within the media landscape in a moment. But just for a little bit of a palate cleanser, we're going to hear from Horace Andy with Money, Money, Money.
Money, 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 money run. Don't let no one influence you. When trouble comes, it's you alone. Money, 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 eat up the root of all evil. Money, 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 yeah, root of all evil.
Tune to Community Radio 3CR with Saturday Kick-Ons with me, Mercedes and Jacob. That was Horace Andy with Money, Money is the Root of All Evil.
Isn't it what?
Yeah.
But anyway, before we went to the break, I am like to welcome, now that we're back, listeners to Palestine Remembered. If you've just tuned in because you're back in town, I'm expecting to hear Palestine Remembered with Yousef. He's still on leave. He'll be back next week. And Mercedes and I from a Friday rave, which is on 5 o'clock on Friday, are filling in with the kind of issues, not about Palestine, but the kind of political analysis that is, I guess, hopefully down your alley anyway. And today we're talking about prediction markets. And just before the break, we were talking about the concept of the wisdom of the crowd and how a diverse large group of people have all making guesses on a particular event occurring have a better success rate than one or two experts. And this has been shown time and time again. And the argument follows, of course, then, that the contract price on prediction markets, the odds, provide a better picture of the future than experts will for corporations, news services, governments and militaries. Because let's face it, the experts have got it wrong so many times.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. And I think it's important to understand how, like, the mechanics, I guess, of how these market works or what in the basis of. And I guess for this part of the show, we're going to be talking more about the companies themselves and where they're currently sitting. Within a geopolitical context, within a social context, and I guess we should start at their relationships with media and news corporations. So Kelshi has entered a partnership with CNN and CNBC. I think that was last year.
Yeah.
And Polymarket. So just remembering that these are the two largest prediction market providers. Yep. I guess online at the moment. So Polymarket has a partnership with Yahoo Finance, and only as of this week is the official prediction partner of the Wall Street Journal and all associated Dow Jones publications.
Wow.
It also runs multiple accounts on social media, particularly X, that are presented as media outlets. And that's called, I think, Raw's Alerts and Newswire. And they kind of pop up with like these breaking. And no doubt Kelshi does the same,
right.
Whilst at the same time flooding bots in automated posts with X. Both of them have a partnership with Elon Musk's X, which I'm going to get to a little bit later.
And both of them also, I think, have Donald Trump Jr. as their advisor.
Strategic advisor. Yeah. That's right. And the venture capital market, I think it's called 1789, of which Donald J. Trump Jr. Has an interest, was one of the initial venture capital firms that funded. I definitely know Polymarket. I'm not sure in terms of Kelshi, but Of course, Peter Thiel was there, and the Founders Fund offered it one of the largest market equity to Polymarket a couple of years ago. And more recently, is it the Intercontinental Exchange or something like that?
Yes, I can't recall.
Can't recall it. Anyway, the company that oversees the New York Stock Exchange. has just given Polymarket a huge, huge shop out.
Right, okay.
Acronym ICE, that I couldn't really get past that. And so, and as we should point out, we are focusing on Polymarket and Kelshi here, but they are there are many other prediction market providers, and they are growing. But I just want to talk...
In terms of how fast they're growing, Kelshi last year had a growth of 1,680% over its previous year, 2024 to 2025. 1,680%. Anyway, so sorry.
Yeah, it sounds like a bubble to me. But yeah. Talking about media and their relationships with large media providers and media outlets, it's been made explicit by Shane Copland, who is the CEO and founder of Polymarket, that he intends Polymarket to become a primary media source. And his claim is that predictions market offer, this is quote, accurate, unbiased and real-time prediction probabilities. And so the partnerships with media outlets not only provide prediction market with a cloak of legitimacy, but also create a runaway feedback loop. And so I just want to present a scenario here. And keep this in mind in relation to the wisdom of the crowd. So the news outlets, say CNN, CNBC, Yahoo Finance, flood news with or the news feeds on X with stories of a particular event. In turn, Kelshi or Polymarket ticker appears to display the data from the predictions market at the bottom of the screen. And that seems like the data-driven evidence that supports said news story.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that the prediction market is driven by the manipulation of public perception, and the increase in the trading on those prediction markets is reflected by what traders are exposed to through the stories that the media outlets are presenting.
Yeah.
So say you do 10 stories on America taking over Greenland and hype up a media manipulation, as 3CR listeners will be very well aware, is nothing new.
I hope you feel manipulated, folks. Sorry.
But, you know, you put 10 stories on the news, it's what everyone's seeing on the feeds about America, the US invading Greenland. Of course, from several different angles and different people who are trading in these contracts, that's going to manipulate the perception and feedback. And so it just becomes a death spiral of a feedback loop.
Looking at the news now, it would be, I haven't looked, but I'll be prepared to bet and even open a contract on the idea that there are more prediction market contracts on the US going into Iran than how many more bombs are going to be dropped in Somalia.
Mm. Yeah, because that's what you see on the news.
Mm.
So I guess that in another instance, you know, where prediction markets appear to be evidence, and this is the thing, they want to, the MO is to be appearance of unbiased and real-time evidence and data. Prediction markets as determined as intelligence.
Yeah.
And so the collection of the data that informs the news or the posts or that's broadcast through Polymarket and Kelshi channels is driven by a collection and AI analysis across a broad spectrum of sources, or so they say.
Yeah.
And so real-time information, including those partnerships that Polymarket and Kelshi have with Twitter, with X, when you look at real-time information that comes across those platforms, it's from some of the largest, with the largest followings of open source intelligence channels, of which that data comes from.
Right.
And so often that real-time information that is reflected in the predictions market is from open source intelligence accounts that informs in part, or so they say, of that data scraping of where they get that information.
Yep.
And so open source intelligence isn't in and of itself a bad thing. But when you couple that with Kelshi and Polymarket's partnership with X, and a precedent does exist for the use of OSINT, so that's open source intelligence accounts, on X for military intelligence. Some listeners to a Friday rave might remember early last year, the US carried out a drone strike in Yemen that killed 8 civilians. where it seemed like the exact target area was assumed to be a Houthi military position that was posted by an OSINT account on X. Now, the bombing of that target, the killing of 8 civilians, in response to that, that OSINT account apologized and said it was a mistake. But when there is already discussions, it's not hypothetical. There's already discussions in military circles about using predictions market and folding it into military intelligence. And so I'm just trying to say that there's, when you talk about open source intelligence, which gives real time or almost, you know, very quick analysis on X, which is scraping data through Grok, you know, Grok uses these analogies from big accounts. They have millions of followers. Some are there for clickbait. Some are legitimate. And some are just just people in their basements making shit up.
But even the ones who are just there for clickbaits, even just a clickbait one, you need to understand people when you're using the internet that all these things, it's not just the contracts on markets that are used by the predictive markets. They go through a whole lot of OSINT, open source information. The things like what you click online, what you buy, who you call, how often you use Uber Eats, how often you use Uber, your public transport. Everything you do is a data point. And we've said this in relation to so many things over the years on this radio station. Everything is a data point. There's no such thing as a free lunch. There's also no such thing as anything being free online. Every click you make is a data point that is collected, collated, tabulated, and sold on. If you're not the client, you're the bloody product. Mm. And this is where they're getting their information from. And all those things are working through algorithms to AI bots to make contracts with predictions.
Mm.
It just... And then the news people become, the people reporting the news, supposedly reporting the news, are the same people who are then creating the odds.
Mm.
And at least, you know, the Strategic Policy Institute or the US Study Center was a different organization to the Nine Network, but now they're bringing it all in-house to the same network.
To the same network. And just on the... On it is being discussed about using predictions market as military intelligence for national security. And another scenario, a hypothetical, but I don't think that this is too could be a too far from the truth. Say a contract is predicting sanctions on Iran's oil exports and can provide insights into potential retaliatory actions taken by the Iranian government. Now, this is an example, even though this is not a military policy, it's by some military guys that they've written this. And so military intelligence officials are speaking on the collection of data from predictions markets on the basis that the belief of traders with financial incentive to bet on contracts and to have the outcomes tip in their favour. So when you think about this hypothetical scenario about Iran's oil being sanctioned, it could potentially result in the forward posturing of the US towards Iran on the basis of a first strike principle. So while the US has created an environment where legitimate reasons for attack don't actually mean anything, we know that that's true, the market in this instance, and remembering that Donald Trump Jr. is a strategic advisor, could provide the cover for the US in the event of a strike or a military incursion, particularly if the predictions market data and subsequent analyses is folded into what is considered military intelligence or under national security.
Like Trump keeps says, we need to do this because the Russians are doing this and the Chinese are doing that.
And listeners need to be reminded about Iraq, that intelligence suggested they had WMDs. Intelligence was later deemed incorrect, but that didn't matter after the country was decimated and over a million people were dead. But it's also important to consider in these instances when we're talking about forward posture and what the predictions market could potentially sway policy, is that who is set to financially benefit from such an outcome? And I'm not talking about the crypto bro in the basement sucking back Vs. But those that hold the power in the traditional centralized market also have the potential to hold sway in the predictions market. So the US oil companies would be set to benefit on sanctions on Iran's oil exports, just as they've benefited from the US taking control of Venezuela's oil industry. And further, any forward posturing for an attack on Iran as a result of the quote-unquote intelligence on the potential retaliatory actions by Iran would also benefit the manufacturers' weapons used in such strikes. Now, this doesn't need to happen after the fact, because creating a forward projection incentive in real time, as Polymarket does, also suggests to traders in traditional stock exchanges to move their money on the basis of these predictions, as we were talking about options and call options. And so the potential for insider trading in this is rife, and there's no prohibition against it.
Yeah.
And also the potential for the predictions market, and this is one's a little bit murkier, but to sway government policy and intervention once the data of the contracts in the predictions market are considered intelligence and therefore true or false. And so I guess in a weird kind of deranged, twisted sort of way, I'm kind of seeing the predictions market or a government or a policy advisor that, you know, take the market as a determination or intelligence as a determination, see the wisdom of the crowd or the population, you know, the population that they're aiming towards in putting more and more money into fewer and fewer hands, make policy decisions on the basis of where those bets will lie.
Of course they will.
Where those predictions are. And this is just like the event doesn't actually need to come to fruition or not.
No.
And that's the thing. It's the predictive market that is a future trading where money is traded between contractors or contracts.
Mm.
And I think it's also just this week, Pete Hegseth, the Secretary for War, announced that the US military is going to become the most AI-forward military in the world.
Yep.
And so they're updating their whole military. And I think
I've believed for a while that Pete Hegseth isn't real. He's just an AI construct.
Well, he's pretty much made his position obsolete now that he said that it's all AI that's going to make all the decisions.
Yeah.
So in June last year, Polymarket partnered with X as its official prediction market partner. And what that partnership does, it's integrating all Polymarket's prediction market contract data and analysis of real-world events into Grok's AI analysis and synthesis of information. And in the announcement, both Polymarket and X said that this is, quote, to provide contextualized, data-driven insights to millions of Polymarket users around the world instantaneously.
So when we're talking about Grok and X, we're talking about Elon Musk. We're talking about Elon Musk. So it's like, it's the same people. The nastiest people who are making somehow, want us to believe that they're making decisions for the better, for the interests of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think also in terms of that partnership where Grok's analysis is going to be, the prediction market's data and contract data is going to be folded into what is actual real-world analysis into actual events rather than just betting on a binary of yes or no of whether that thing will happen.
Yes.
Is also Pete Hegseth's announcement of AI being folded into the military coupled with prediction market data being considered important for national security and another data point in terms of intelligence gathering, that when Pete Hegseth announced that the US military was directly partnering with Grok and Grok AI to integrate into the military's AI analysis and data collection, I think it's, to think about what that might look like when we've got on the one hand military intelligence, prediction market is military intelligence, integrated with Grok, which is then integrated with drones, armed autonomous vehicles, military capabilities that are beyond belief, that we don't even know exist yet, but they're going to be accelerated over the next couple of years under this executive order. With Grok, Elon Musk, Grok at the helm, and Google's Gemini.
And Grok, just for listeners who may not be aware, Grok are the AI mob who have recently come under fire because of their nudification, so-called, abilities, where you could someone could post a picture of someone, let's not mince words, usually a woman, and say, can you show me a picture of what this woman would look like nude or in a micro bikini?
Oh, it's...
I mean, that's what they're getting under fire for, and they should be under fire for that. It's disgusting. But people are talking about the impact they're going to have on decimating villages.
And I think it's... I mean, we are almost out of time, but
are we
hope
already?
We hope that we've kind of given you a picture of one of how it works.
We ought to go for a two-hour show next summer.
But of how, I mean, the mechanics of the predictions market, because folks, we're going to increasingly see this more and more, and I think the and what the morality of it, it's deranged, it's macabre, it's unexplainable of how messed up it is, but also the mechanics of it, how it works and how it is we are going to increasingly see it into in being folded into the decision making and policy planning, or the information rather of policy planners and decision makers.
Well, of course, because you know, policy planners and decision makers, even in our day-to-day lives, in our organisations, make decisions based on the likely outcomes and the likely events happening. To not do so is madness. It's what is determining the odds.
What is determining the odds? That's right. And I think, I mean, to wrap us up, we did get. I guess we want to finish with a quote from journalist Brian Phillips. But when talking about this with between ourselves and some other comrades, was reminded of Society the Spectacle
Absolutely.
By Guy Debord, which was written in 1967. And if you haven't read it or if you're familiar with it, either way, definitely read it over again, because rereading it in the context of looking at Polymarket, I think Guy Debord was really, really bang on back in 1967 in terms of understanding the spectacle and the alienation and exploitation and abstraction of what the world is now. And this is really Polymarket and the prediction market seem to be the epitome of the spectacle in this instance.
Yep.
But to finish off this week, as we are just about out of time, remember that you can go back and listen back on a Friday Rose podcast page. But this is a quote from that I think really succinctly articulates that alienation and exploitation of prediction markets by journalist Brian Phillips. You're sitting in your living room trying to make a few bucks by guessing the date that Israel will next strike Lebanon. Meanwhile, someone with inside knowledge of that date is planning to use it to take your money. Meanwhile, the prediction markets are taking a cut of the transaction and using it to buy lobbyists to keep oversight down. Brand partnerships to make them look legitimate and advertising to keep you gambling. Meanwhile, someone in Lebanon is sitting there in their apartment hoping that their building doesn't explode.
That's it. And it's getting to the point where somebody in Lebanon will have their own mobile phone out looking at the poly market or the predictive market prices, and making decisions on whether they should stay or flee based on the predictive market odds.
Yeah, that's capitalism, folks, and that's where it's headed. And that's enough for us this week on Saturday Kick-Ons. Asia Pacific Currents and Palestine Remembered will be back to regular programming next week. Appreciate your ears while we've been rubbing it on for you for over the summer break. But you can keep listening to us on our regular program of Friday Rave every Friday at 5 o'clock here on 3CR Community Radio.
See you on Invasion Day.